when your money was committed to be spent so that people can fill their empty sheds with boilers and burn as much fuel as they want, why are they confident of doing so? Because they had a legally binding commitment from our government to get paid for it. To the extent where our government is having to try to recalculate where they're going to find that money from. Here are the numbers for you. October 2015, £250 million of your money. November 2015, £235 million of your money. These are the total 20-year costs. So these figures that I'm reading out to you are the 20-year costs of each month. Why are they doing it like this in their government documents? Because they know they've committed to the money. They know that, you know, call it spent, call it a commitment. They know that they have to leave this money aside because they've guaranteed it to the people taking up this scheme. So in those 2 months, October 2015 and November 2015, £485 million of your money was either spent, my words, or committed to be spent in a legally binding contract, is what Gregory would prefer I say. The Ulster Unionist Party leader, Mike Nesbitt, with us now. Good morning, Mike. Your reaction to all of this?
Oh, my word. I tell you what, Stephen, I used to do media training, and if I was doing media training, I would copy that interview with Gregory. And I would use it to say, here's how to bring your entire sector into disrepute. Now, he chooses his quotes from Jonathan Bell, so let me choose one in response. Also from February 2016, Jonathan Bell, who was minister in charge of the renewable heat schemes, and there were two, remember, domestic and non-domestic, said, quote, "It is with great reluctance I have had to announce my intention to close both schemes. Quote, both schemes have been very successful." Successful. Why did we vote to keep it going? Because there were people, domestic users and small businesses, who had invested thousands of pounds in kit, who were having boilers installed in good faith, believing they were going to avail of the RHI scheme. Jonathan Bell announced at 6:02 on a Friday evening his intention to close it. And as Gregory is being so particular about semantics, he twice accuses people like me of voting for an extension to the RHI. We didn't vote for an extension. We voted for the DUP and Devi to honour its previous commitment, as discussed, because people had invested serious money in hardware. That's what I think.
Gregory, you can respond to him, Gregory, obviously.
Yes, well, I'm glad at least Mike does own up to voting to extend the scheme.
Not extend,
yeah,
Gregor.
Well, that is what you did. And if you want me to quote some of your MLAs at the time, I'm happy to do it. You know, what Sandra Overend said on the 22nd of February, what Adrian Cochrane-Watson said on the 15th of February during the debate.
Well, why don't you respond to what Jonathan Bell said in his news release on the 5th of February? Both schemes have been very successful.
Well, you know, Mike, at the time, I didn't hear anyone saying that the scheme was a bad scheme.
At what time? What month?
Whenever this debate was going on.
You're talking about February 2016 here?
Yes.
Are you seriously telling me that you don't think senior department officials were looking at this, trembling at the amount of numbers of our money that was being committed to that we could not afford?
Well, Stephen, if you want to go back before that, whenever the committee in the committee structure in the Assembly works, that the Economy Committee now, which was then the Debtie Committee, monitors the departmental spend and asks the Minister to come before it. And 4 years ago, the then Economy Committee, the Debtie Committee, said that they sought and received assurances on the incentive and tariff levels, and they were quite content with the scheme. Nobody was discontented with the scheme until it became clear that there was potentially abuses of the scheme.
Are you for real?
Of people.
Are you for real? A whistleblower went to the leader of your party in 2014 with deep concerns. They were then passed on to senior officials within her department. A whistleblower then went back. She wrote a second time saying, please, please look at my deep concerns about this. So when you say everybody was content, your leader was approached by a whistleblower and told about deep concerns, and that then went into the system.
As a result of Arlene Foster ensuring that it went into the system.
And is that her responsibility ended at that stage?
No, it isn't a case of her responsibility. The way it works, Stephen, is this. If someone comes to a minister and says, I have concerns about X, the minister then takes the issue, whether it's an email, a conversation, or a letter, or whatever, and says to the relevant senior departmental official, I've had this communication, please examine it, meet the person or make contact with them, and pursue the matter. And if there are any issues, come back to me. That's the way it works. Because there may be one, there may be five, there could be 25 people on a daily basis reporting things, making comments, doing whatever, saying a whole range of things about a range of people and departments and issues. And they are acted upon by the relevant senior departmental official.
Why weren't they?
Well, the point we need to establish now is that the Public Accounts Committee, who are looking at all of this, and it's a committee that's made up of a cross section of the parties in the Assembly. It's not just either a single party or a double party committee. It's made up of all parties. They are looking at it. Let's let them finish their work. Bring back their report, and it's not going to be a case of, as you also said, I think 20 minutes ago, a man told me. I've got that quote here. You were out last night, and a man told me.
Correct.
Yes, right. Well, we're not going to operate on the basis of a man told me. We need to operate on the basis of solid information.
Gregory, let me expand on it. I was going to wait.
You're going to expand it? You're going to clarify again, are you?
I was going to wait until tomorrow.
All right. Right. Okay.
Are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening. Yes.
That man was a whistleblower. Another whistleblower who fed his concerns into the system. Another whistleblower. I won't call those whistleblowers cranks. Someone in your party referred to some whistleblowers as cranks. That man...
And he wasn't talking about this issue despite your attempt to make the connection.
Well, actually, he was talking in a committee when this issue was being discussed about
cranks. He wasn't talking about this issue despite your attempt to make the connection.
So let me just elaborate on the man who told me, if you want. Yes, a citizen of this country contacted the Nolan Show and said that he had deep concerns and he was a whistleblower and he had fed it into the department. And yes, what I did, Gregory, criticise me if you want. I started early yesterday morning and at midnight last night, I was talking to that whistleblower gathering information. So yes, I was doing that. Mike Nesbitt, you say in a press release today that you have a smoking gun around this. What does this mean?
Yes, well, this is a scandal of epic proportions, Stephen, and Mrs. Foster is claiming that there's a difference between policy and detail, which is correct from a minister's point of view, and she's claiming she has no fingerprints on the detail, and we can prove that that is not correct. And it all revolves around the safeguard that was not put in place, which would have prevented money being wasted. That safeguard is called digression. And basically, that is a system whereby, as the number of applications increases, the level of the tariff decreases. So, in simple terms, if Mrs. Foster had £1 to give away and only one person applied, they would get the pound. But if 100 people applied, they would get a penny each. That means that the amount of money, the total amount of money in the pot, is protected and we don't have the scandal that we have, which will, to please Gregory, by 2036, cost us £400 million. There were two policy options on the table at the time that digression was not brought in. And I'm going to quote here John Mills, head of the Energy Division in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Investment, in front of the DETI Committee on the 9th of February in 2016. He was being asked about digression, and he admitted that they knew all about it. Indeed, it was in a consultation document DETI published in July 2013. But he said, as well as digression, the other policy option that was on the table was extending renewable heat incentives to domestic users. So you have two things. Shall we extend this to domestic users, or shall we bring in digression? In other words, shall we have controlling costs as a priority or extending the scheme as the priority? The quote from Mr. Mills is this: "So the minister decided that the priority should be on the introduction of the domestic renewable heat incentive scheme. Mrs. Foster chose the domestic scheme over digression. She made the decision not to cap RHI payments."
We have some of the audio that you've just discussed. Let's have a listen to this. You'll hear Green Party leader Stephen Agnew, who starts this exchange, speaking to John Mills, the head of energy at DETI.
What consideration was given to this in 2012, and why did we not choose to follow the same model?
A number of changes, as I said, were introduced to the GB regulations, including expanding the scheme. There was a consultation undertaken in here in 2013 about a range of these measures, including the introduction of a domestic RHI scheme. At that point,
did we consult on this thing of digression?
It was included. Digression was not. I'm not sure how much detail was in the consultation on digression.
It was a variation of it.
Demand management was one of the factors in the consultation document that went out. At that point, the Northern Ireland scheme was underperforming, and therefore we were not using up what you might say was free money in terms of AMI.
Just to be clear,
can I just finish the point?
Sure.
So the ministers decided that the priority should be on the introduction of the domestic RHI scheme. So resources were devoted to that. It's not a case that we said, well, we're not going to do X, Y, and Z. We chose to do Z.
But digression only kicks in if the demand effectively starts to outstrip the supply. So you could.
That's the intention.
There is nothing contradictory about introducing domestic RHI and introducing digression. They could have. There would have been nothing contradictory.
None of the changes would have been contradictory, but resources being what they were, these are complex regulations that's all set out in legislation, and of necessity, one had to be done after the other.
Okay.
Well, as John said, at that time, the scheme was underperforming, and the concern would have been that Northern Ireland was not making its intended contribution to the UK.
It wasn't a priority, but clearly in GB, a problem had been identified, or a potential problem had been identified. They came up with a solution, and we chose not to have that solution for Northern Ireland.
I think we didn't choose not to do it, to exclude it. We prioritised other things and did those things.
You chose to prioritise other things rather than, you know, I think we're getting into semantics.
So Gregory, clearly what Mike Nesbitt is presenting this morning is a scenario where we just heard there that the minister chose to prioritise looking at the domestic scheme rather than putting a fail-safe, a cost control, into the non-domestic scheme. The non-domestic scheme is what has ended up costing us money. And she decided to prioritise in the domestic rather than the non-domestic scheme.
Yes, but Stephen, the whole digression issue, as you heard in the clip, at that stage wasn't a huge topic because, as I outlined earlier, there was an underspend in the overall scheme. There wasn't. I mean, the digression issue only becomes relevant and topical whenever there is an outstrip in terms of demand.
Whenever it's spiralling out of control, it only becomes relevant?
No. Why would you consider digression if the amount of money that was available wasn't being spent?
Well, here's why. Because at the very beginning, when this scheme was set up, under Arlene Foster's watch, 2012 it was started. I think it's November 2012 this scheme started, okay?
Is that just after the DETI committee approved the plans?
Well, let's stick
and the,
on...
And the quote I made from the DETI committee chair, who's the SDLP chair.
Well, let's stick on one train of thought rather than getting diverted.
Right, okay.
So when the scheme was initially set up, It's Arlene Foster's scheme. She's the minister at the time, okay? She's the person protecting us, ultimately. She's the person ensuring, ultimately, ensuring that these schemes and these projects are value for money for us, the taxpayer. That's how it works when you're a minister. The risks were identified. The risks of if ever in this scheme, the clear indication was in the risk analysis that if this scheme could have presented a situation where demand, in other words, people were coming in and wanting it, that demand would outstrip the department's ability to pay for it. And so therefore it was flagged up that we should maybe consider cost controls at the very beginning. In other words, if digression had have been there, had have been built in as a fail-safe, we would not be in the situation we are today, Gregory. And is it not fair for me to put it to you that in the ministers not putting in cost controls until after it was too late, that's like saying you only put a seatbelt on after you've crashed the car.
Yeah.
It's there.
Totally inappropriate.
The manufacturer puts it into the car in case there's an accident, and you wear it in case there's an accident. What did your government do? Your government didn't put any of the controls in, and now you're saying you didn't do it because you didn't think there would be an accident.
No, Stephen, we go back to 2012, and again, this is how it works. Whenever a minister brings forward a proposition, be it RHI or anything else, what they do is they would produce a paper, they would go before their relevant statutory committee, they would explain, this is what I intend to do. They then subject themselves and their senior officials to scrutiny by that committee. And that committee is made up of a cross-party range of interests in the Assembly. That's the way it works. That's the way it worked in relation to this scheme. So in the run-up to 2012, before there was any talk of digression, before there was any talk of either oversupply or undersupply, there was a rigorous examination of what the scheme might mean and what it could achieve. And here's what the chair of the Assembly Committee said, the SDLP chair. The committee's scrutiny of the development of the renewable heat incentive has been considerable and reflects the importance and long-term nature of the proposals. Before supporting the RHI, the committee sought and received assurances on incentive and tariff levels, banding levels, incentives for domestic consumers, payments to participants, and support levels for the renewable heat premium payment scheme. End of quote. That's what the all-party deputy committee said before the scheme even started.
Mike Nesbitt, do you want to respond to this?
Ministerial responsibility. That is my response, Stephen. This is a smoking gun from the 9th of February 2016. The head of the Energy Division in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Investment said, so the minister decided. Mrs. Foster decided. And I heard her give an interview yesterday where she said, unfortunately, no advice was brought to her in relation to things like tariff reductions and digression. I don't see how that statement squares with the fact that John Mills, the head of the Energy Division, is telling the ETI committee in February of this year that she made a decision between the domestic renewable heat incentive and digression.
Mike, can I ask David Ford a question? He said he was otherwise engaged during the relevant debate and vote. Were you present during the vote on the 15th of February?
Gregory, you know exactly I was present. You know how I voted.
Perhaps you could tell the public that you voted to keep the scheme open.
Yes, which was not an extension, Gregory. It was me voting.
Keeping it open is not an extension?
Are you going to let me finish?
I'm quite happy for you to dig deeper.
I voted to keep the scheme open as it had been planned to be open, because domestic users and small businesses were investing thousands of pounds in boilers, doing it in good faith because they had read that there was a scheme and they wanted to avail of that scheme.
But should you not have scrutinised, Mike Nesbitt, the scheme and the holes in it and the flaws in it?
Yes, we should have.
And why didn't you?
Well, a committee can only investigate the information that is brought before it, Stephen. And when a minister says both schemes have been very successful, when Arlene Foster says this demonstrates that the Northern Ireland scheme is punching above its weight, when she says, in answer to a written question, at this stage, I am content that the current budget for the renewable heat incentive is sufficient. That's what we're scrutinising. That's what we're being told. Now, do we take a position that every executive minister is going to tell lies to committee?
I want